Luke Stoltz has been brewing beer for 10 years. Since then, his setup has grown from a couple of pots on a stove in an apartment to what he says is a pretty advanced operation. As it's too hot right now to be prime for brewing, which he typically does outside, he is storing his supplies in the garage, but he doesn't mind getting them out for show.
And this is all the equipment I use. This is a converted kettle, which you'll typically see in a lot of homebrew setups because it's easy to fit a whole bunch and find old kegs. Everybody's got old kegs somewhere. Cut the top off and make a burner out of them, and that's what you cook most of your beer in, because there is a cooking process involved.
So is it a special burner and stuff?
It's like a turkey fryer.
Turkey fryer.
Just an outdoor turkey fryer.
The converted keg rests on top of the burner. The first step is filling it with water and letting it heat. While that's going on, a brewer might get their grains together for that batch of beer. There are many different types of grains, depending on the type of beer one hopes to make.
So any number of these grains, you would see, you know, this is what would make up your recipe for many ones. Obviously ones that look like they've been burnt have almost been burnt, and that will make you a very, very dark beer. In a typical 5-gallon batch, I use about an eighth of a pound of this roasted barley, because you can see that there's a number on here, and it's called a Lovibond number, and this one gives 432 Lovibond to it, which is crazy dark. Okay. It's crazy dark. This one right here gives 60 Lovibond, and you can see the difference just in the color and how much they've been roasted.
As one can picture, the grain with the lower Lovibond is much lighter in color for use in, say, a blonde beer. Mixing grains does occur, and often. These bags of grain are small, but Luke normally has a 55-pound sack of one in particular.
Is the Turo, which is just a base grain. It's a very light Lovibond. It's just there to give you a whole bunch of sugars. All of these are kind of there to give flavors and colors. Like I said, when you're using these, I mean, it's typically less than 1 to 2 pounds of these, whereas that base grains, I may use 12 pounds of it.
Once the grains are chosen, they are placed in a mill. The insides are crushed to help release sugars, but the outsides remain intact to help with filtering, which is involved in the next process. The grain mixture is placed in a mash tun. Luke's tun is a converted cooler, the kind you might take tailgating. This one has a special spout on one end and a grid of pipes on the inside bottom. Remember that water that was boiling? That's poured in with the grain, turning the starch into sugars. The temperature of that water has a lot to do with how the beer is made.
So much so that some old breweries, when the head brewmaster was the only one that knew the recipe. Now, everybody working in the brewery could tell from grains that were coming in and what kind of hops and all those other fun things, and you can pick that out. But the temperature he never wanted to give to anybody. So what he used to do is, when depending on the beer that they'd wipe, they'd go take the temperature dial and he'd calibrate it to 152 degrees, wipe the dial off completely, and just put a paint mark pen on where the temperature had to be, so that if he wasn't there brewing, the assistant brewers or whoever else was in the brewery just knew they had to hit that temperature. They didn't know what it was, but they had to hit that temperature, and then that's how they got the beer out of that.
After sitting in the mash tun for about an hour, the resulting liquid is called wort, a sugary water. The pipes take the wort out of the tun and back into the kettle. The pipes have special grooves to ensure that the spent grains stay in the tun. At this point, the wort is brought to a boil and hops are added. Hops are a type of flower clusters that have been used in brewing for centuries. Hops can bitter the brew, add aroma to it. Different types of hops have different flavors and aromas.
So these are some of the hops that I have on hand. This is just Cascade hops, Willamette, and that one's Kent Goldings.
So what are the different flavors?
You can get more floral flavors, you can get more citrusy flavors, you can get more grassy flavors. Now, I know you said you're not a fan of hops, so this probably will be your least favorite part of it, but you can really smell the difference between hops. That's the best way to really know, is to get into it. Now, these aren't fresh hops. The hops you typically see come in a flower. They look kind of like that.
These hops are in pellet form. They look a lot like rabbit food. And smelling them really wasn't so bad. They sort of smelled like rabbit food, too. As for when to add the hops to the boil,
makes a difference on how bitter it is. If you're doing your first edition at like 60 minutes, that one adds not a whole lot of aroma because you're boiling out so much of the hops at that point, but it'll add a whole lot more bitter flavor. As you get closer to finishing your boil and where you get the flame out, you'll have a whole lot more aroma staying with it than you would the bittering. And so it's just all in how you formulate your recipe around that as well. So at that point, I mean, that's the only ingredients that are really going into it. Water, barley, and hops.
Brewers can add other things to their recipes if they want. Luke has a can of pumpkin on hand for a fall time pumpkin ale. And we tried a variety that uses Rice Krispies, and it did sort of snap, crackle, pop. Once the brew is boiled, it has to be cooled as quickly as possible, which is just as important as the temperature of the original water. He has another contraption to help with this.
So what this is this is called a counterflow chiller. So that the spout on my kettle would end up connecting to this over here, and the hot wort would be flowing through here and coming out this side. And this tube goes all the way through the inside of this hose nonstop. So you run water through it the other direction on the outside, which means you get ridiculously hot wort coming in here and very cold one coming out here because you're running water past it
so
the opposite direction.
So beer's on the inside mm-hmm. and water's going around it.
Water's running around it on the outside. Now part of the reason you want to chill so fast is when you're making beer, you're kind of creating this perfect habitat for yeast to thrive in.
Unfortunately, it is also a perfect habitat for bacteria. You have to be careful, he says, because you want the yeast to ferment your beer and not something else, which could make off flavors. Once the liquid is cooled, it is put into a carboy, essentially a large water bottle like you see attached to dispensers in many homes and businesses, and then goes in the yeast. If the wort is too hot, the yeast will die. If it's too cool, it will stay dormant. For most beers, the temperature is about 70 degrees, though it's much lower for a lager. Now that it's in the carboy and the yeast is in, it's ready to ferment, the bubbling of the yeast which forms alcohol, and then on to aging. The time it rests, again, depends on the type of brew.
My barley wine will sit, you know, it ages and it actually goes into a keg and it's best after about a year.
A year, yeah.
There's other beers, I mean, if I'm in a hurry and need to throw a beer down for something that I know is coming up, I mean, you can have another one done in 3 weeks if you were in a hurry. It's just all about how fast it ferments. And then the aging, I mean, typically aging has a whole lot more. Ready to drink a beer?
Yeah.
All right.
Let's try it. And we got a couple different ones.
Let's try it.
Might work better. So that's a wheat beer.
Luke's garage is also equipped with a customized freezer, complete with automatic temperature controls and 4 taps. All in all, we tried about 6 beers, from Luke's own blonde, my favorite, a brown ale, to an oatmeal stout made by a member of Luke's group, the River Valley Ale Raisers. The group has about 45 members and meets at Grow Fresh, a brewer's supply store in Fort Smith. They also have brew days, when they get together to teach others and to brew quantities for events, one of which they have tomorrow, an All-American Brew-Off competition. Beginning at 9 a.m., about 70 entries will be judged on appearance, mouthfeel, and aroma. The public is invited to attend this event at the Aspen Hotel in Fort Smith. For more information, visit rivervalleyaleraisers.com. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Christina Thomas.